あ、ここいるんだ。
本当？見えないでしょ？どこにいるのかな？ね、見えない。
What's good, internet? It is June 2nd, 2017, and you are listening to Waypoint
Austin,
Radio.
Austin.
But that's Patrick Klepek.
He's coming.
That's my son.
He's not live from Lobby 1. He's somewhere.
Patrick, what's up? Where are you? Patrick's. Oh, Patrick, put on a cowboy hat.
Oh. Breaking news with a hat.
Breaking news from Reddit user DevilDogOfficial in the PlayerUnknown's Battleground subreddit.
Oh, the official DevilDog? Just confirm for me. This is the official DevilDog.
The official DevilDog.
Okay.
Discussion topic, why we need bicycles, the argument for stealth transportation in PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
That's a good idea. It's also terrifying.
Yeah. Oh, it was so good. If you can shoot a dude in the head while he's trucking along on a bicycle.
What if you have a bell? With a little bell. And you go, ding, ding. And you're like, hide in a house. And then you're like, oh, we got shotguns. We're looking at the door. And then you hear, ding, 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 ding. And he's like taunting you, and then a grenade comes through the window.
Ding, ding.
Yeah, exactly.
So, oh my god!
You guys say this, but here's what I see. I see session after session.
Okay,
where
here we
you
go.
You come to a clearing with a bicycle tied up under a tree.
Everybody's
like a goat.
Oh,
like a sacrificial goat. And you'll be like, oh, this is too good to be true. And then you'll be like, but there's this bicycle. And nobody will think, hey, isn't that guy like ride by on a bicycle and fuck us up like 10 minutes ago? And you'll be like, no, I think this is good. This is meant to be.
It's a two-seater. And there's two of us.
Yeah. It's like bicycles will become your new tombstones. Like,
put it
like
on
every
the shit
session,
list.
It'll just be like your corpse face down next to a bicycle to like mark your passing.
Wow.
You're probably right. But I still want bicycles in PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
Yeah. Oh, give me the bikes. Especially like, what if you have to like kind of you have to tap a button to like
pedal
like
to pedal.
Pedal. It's not.
Oh man,
it's
a new keyboard command that Patrick can whiff.
Fucking everybody's a critic this week. Jesus Christ. Rob Zachney also calling in from Los Angeles. And our very own Danielle Riendo joined me here in Lobby 1.
Hi.
How's everybody doing besides making fun of my good son, Patrick Klepek, and my performance?
I remapped it. Austin's the one that can't remember what happened a couple goddamn weeks ago when I put
it's been
in
a
my mouth.
Very busy week or two or three.
Then why is the shade getting thrown at me? Get your priorities together.
I'm not
Rob.
Throwing your shade at you. I'm throwing shade at Rob, who's throwing it at us. Family's got to stick together, Patrick. We'll talk about it later.
You'll have a family chat.
Let's go to friendly
family meeting.
Ice cream family meeting.
Did you have family meetings growing up?
No,
did anybody actually have those, or are they in sitcoms only?
One time,
okay.
And that was that I forged a signature on. Like, if so, the way it worked in high school was that you would, if you were doing bad in a class,
yeah.
you would get like a thing that was like, "Yo, parents got to sign this." The parent has to know that you're doing poorly. And I was like, "I'll bring the grade up. I'm not going to let them see this and worry about." Because I was like a very. Up until that point in my life, I'd done very well in school,
yeah.
and then I got to, like, high school-level math and was just, like, not cut out for
that
it.
Happened to me, too.
Because it took studying, and, like, everything else I did in life, I didn't need to study. I was like, oh, yeah, I read the thing. I got it. Don't worry about it. Like, I read it real quick on the way in.
Yeah.
And so I got this thing that was supposed to get signed by a parent, and I just did a very, very good fake signature from my mom. And I raised the grade up successfully.
Yeah.
And then they came into the parent-teacher's thing in the second semester, and the teacher was like, you know, I don't know what you guys did, but after I sent the thing home, you know, maybe you changed what his hours were or took away video games or something. And he just got so much better. And yeah, my dad was like, oh, yeah, we're going to have a meeting. And that was like one of these great moments in my life because my parents were divorced. And it was like, no, we're having a meeting. The
meeting.
Whole family is going to be here.
We're going to get over this hump.
You gathered the clans. Let me tell you how that story went for me. So it happened in third grade because I had this... I had an elementary school teacher in third grade who was very much like, even though it was third grade, was like, listen, you kids are going to learn how the real world works here. No one cares if you're tired. You have to do tons of homework all the time. So, like, it was like third grade, and we're doing like 5 hours of homework a night. It's nuts.
Jesus.
Oh, my.
So I start to fall behind. And eventually this leads to the note getting sent home, except she gives me the note. And I freak out because, like, until this moment, I've been, like, the perfect student, the perfect son, all this stuff. So I have this thing in my backpack that, like, it's like a viper, right? I'm just like, I'm not taking that out. Like, I'm not showing this to anybody.
Man.
And I can't remember if I forged the note or just never passed it along, but the teacher calls home eventually and is like, what about this note I sent home? And all hell breaks loose. Like, you know, my parents are like, we thought you were honest. We have raised you to be truthful.
You were eight!
All this. Yeah, no shit. This is where this leads. Listen to this fucked up thing this leads to. So, eventually they see the note, all hell breaks loose. A few weeks later, somebody in my classroom, and I'm pretty sure I know who this was, because like, it was the dumbest motherfucker in this,
who was
in this
it?
Class.
What was their name? Just first name.
Xander.
Was it Devil Dog Official?
Devil Dog!
So, Devil Dog, Crystal, a.k.a. Devil Dog, I am like 85% sure, decided to sharpen all their crayons in the mechanical, the electric pencil sharpener, and gums it up. There's just a wad of like superheated crayon wax inside this thing. And it turns into Mutiny on the Bounty. And that's not Mutiny, but Pain Mutiny.
Right.
Like, this teacher is like, who did this? Oh. Nobody is going to to recess until we discover who destroyed my electric pencil sharpener. And then she's like, now, I'm not going to say who I think did this.
Oh, shit.
But I do know there's somebody in this classroom who has been dishonest.
You see something, say something.
Yeah, and she looks at me. And she's like, somebody in this classroom doesn't own up to their mistakes.
Oh, no.
Now, I'm not going to name names, but maybe this person should think about being honest for a change.
Oh, my God.
And admitting what they did. And then we miss one recess. Nobody breaks. Second recess.
Oh, shit. This was going like day to day?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So second time this happens, like, kids start coming up to me. And it's like, it's the fucking interrogation.
Rob, oh my
Rob,
God.
Rob, we just, know it's not just, you, but just take one for the team, man.
Yeah, exactly.
We got to go to recess, bro.
Like, look, the four-square tournament
we're gonna break.
Needs to go. Like, look, you know what you did,
oh,
you did it. Or the better was like, look, you already know you're in the shit.
Right.
Like, just own up to it. Like, how much worse are things going to get? Okay? Like, just confess and get us out of this.
What's amazing is she succeeded in teaching you how the real world works.
She really did!
Yeah, so it was fucked up. But anyway.
So how far in did you have to go testify in front of the Senate? Well, how far in was your Senate testimony? God. So what happened? Tell me the end.
So in the end, nobody breaks. Nobody ever confesses.
True.
And eventually, the teacher
and you never went to recess again.
Yeah, we like, nobody
saw fourth
grade.
Right.
Rob never left the third grade. He's still there.
There he
still
is.
Back there.
Well, turn the camera around.
I think I am. But yeah, no. It just came out where she was like, "Well, I guess this is why we can't have nice things, and now you have to use the mechanical pencil sharpener, not the nice electric one." So thank you very much, whoever you are. And then later. Somebody is like, oh yeah, Crystal said she did it.
God damn.
she wanted sharper crayons. And she actually wanted to put the shavings in the glue to make it different colored.
That sounds all right.
You know, Crystal was actually pretty creative, it sounds like.
Yeah.
She ate a lot of that glue, Danielle. She ate a lot of that glue.
I got you.
Do you think
that
the crayon coloring changed the flavor at all?
It had to.
I think
the glue.
It probably made it a little, like.
Crayons don't taste like
It's glue. Like a ragu.
True. True.
Yeah.
True. It's like a ragu. Exactly.
A delicious purple ragu. Whatever her favorite color was. I don't know why I thought Crystal would love purple.
I think you're making assumptions.
We got
it's
in
a
trouble.
Good read. It's a
we
good
definitely
read.
We definitely got in trouble like that once in grade school. I went to Catholic school with terrifying nuns.
Ooh.
And we had a situation like that with the no recess and we actually had a moment of silence until somebody confessed. Like the teacher just sat there,
locked the door,
staring at us until somebody confessed. Only it was during singing a semi-religious song about Jesus and somebody
semi-religious,
a very religious. Well, song. You
know, it wasn't about any of Jesus's like more religious stories.
You know,
it was just about a time he like went out to dinner. It was just like he went on a date.
Jesus
once.
Wanted a ragu.
He
okay?
wanted a ragu. He you went know? Out to a nice Italian place. Forget about it.
It was a delicious ragu, and somebody sang the lyrics "Deep in my heart, I feel the need to fart," and that was
That sounds like Catholic school. Yeah,
that was Catholic school.
That also sounds like Danielle. Honestly,
somebody, someone said that.
I don't know who did that. Some weird kid. I don't know.
It was supposed to be that Rob Zachney. Mm. He's the one who can.
It was Devil Dog.
It was Devil Dog official.
Devil Dog.
God damn. Well, I'm glad we're all getting all of our stories from our youth out today. God. Speaking, though, of religious singing, you know there's one game with more religious singing than any other. It's called Halo.
That's a good point.
It's a stretch. There's chanting. They do like the, whatever, I'm a choir
choral,
singing.
Yeah, choral.
It's like Gregorian chant, but about
it's like
Halo.
Gregorian. Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. That is the song from Halo. It says that in parentheses. It says Gregorian chant, then in parentheses, the song from Halo. We ran a really great feature this week. I just wanted to shout it out so people would know about it who only really listen to us on the podcast. We ran a definitive oral history of Halo. As far as anything can be definitive, obviously nothing can be truly final. But we ran a 35,000-word oral history about the Halo series written by Steve Hask, edited by Mike Diver, with original art by Eric Alahe, additional research by Jordan Mallory, a lot of great design work by Aaron Shapiro. Just like all these people came together to make this thing that's incredible. It has interviews with anybody who's kind of ever been a big name who's touched the Halo franchise, you know, ranging from Marty O'Donnell to Ryan Payton when he came on in for 4, like just all of these amazing people who are telling great stories about the kind of move from Bungie as the developer of games like Marathon and Myth to the developer people fell in love with around Halo. And it's just filled with great anecdotes. There's a good Steve Jobs story.
Yeah. There's a good story about the name.
There's a good story about the name. Microsoft hated the name Halo and thought it was too feminine and too, like, disconnected from what they didn't understand any of the sci-fi shit. They're like, no, people want to play a game with a space marine. Like, that's what they're here for. They're not here for any
marine.
Of your bullshit sci-fi lore. Turned out, people were there for the bullshit sci-fi lore. So, go check that out. Really great story. That's on waypoint.vice.com. If you scroll down all the way to features, it'll be down there. On the front page. So shout outs to that. What else have people been – what's been going on with everybody else this week? For me, it's been that story and like getting that ready and like trying to figure out how to track, you know, how it's being read and like talking to people about it. So but that's what I've been doing. What's everybody else been doing this week? So no one's done anything. This is it.
I can't talk about the game I've been playing.
Everyone misses the pass. Everyone's just like, well, I'm not grabbing that.
You're doing the silent thing. You're doing the thing that you
did
when
you're doing the thing you did in third grade.
Yeah.
He's trying not to get blamed for the crayons.
This is the problem is I know what Patrick's been doing, which has been playing Battlegrounds with me, which means we're just going to talk about that, and I don't want to just turn this into a Battlegrounds cast.
All right. Yeah, Let's talk about Max. Do you like robots, Austin?
What?
Do you like robots?
I
how do you feel about robots?
I'm pro giant robot.
You like them?
I'm
going to
move this mic. I love a good giant robot.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I actually don't think it is. I'm not, like, bigger the better. I'm not, like, a size queen about my robots.
Okay. So, like it can be, like, mobile suits, heavy gears.
Yeah.
Like, all that's good.
All that's good. The way down to, like, an exosuit that's, like, just barely bigger than a person. All the way up to, like, oh, that skyscraper is secretly a robot. All the way up to a planet, what is a robot? Like, what's the planet that's a robot from Transformers? That's,
Cybertron?
Cybertron is the home planet, so no.
I know what you're talking about.
This
I don't
is
know what
kill
it's
me.
Called.
I'm
Wasn't
so...
Orson Welles like the voice
yeah,
of
Orson
it?
Yeah, Orson Welles was the voice of it in the movie.
It's pretty cool.
Anyway, all the way up to that size. If you told me that the galaxy was one big robot,
you'd finally
right,
had,
I gotta
you'd
go
finally
write a story
yeah,
real
you got
quick.
Something,
right,
yeah.
exactly.
Are
exactly.
we robots in that scenario?
We're little robots. We're like nanomachines inside of the galaxy robot. You
was
know?
This what near...
Automata
was actually
yeah.
about.
Uh-huh.
Is that what it
is? Unicron. Thank you, chat. Unicron.
Ah, yes.
Metroplex is a city, not a planet. Anyway, continue, Rob. Talk about robots.
All right. So, I've been playing a very little bit of the new Battletech from Harebrained Games being published by Paradox.
Yeah, that connection is already really interesting to me. Seeing Harebrained Games do a thing with Paradox was really surprising. But I've loved what Harebrained's done with the Shadowrun RPGs. If you guys haven't played those, you should think about at least checking out Dragonfall or Hong Kong. They're both really good.
Yeah, unfortunately, I played the first one, like the first one that came out, which was good.
Yeah,
solid,
it's solid.
Like,
it's solid.
Enjoyable, but I had heard that both expansions were like exponentially better. But I missed out on those, but have been very excited for the prospect of them like doing something with mechs, which like is... Like, is this game basically Shadowrun with Max?
No,
like,
no,
is
no,
it
no.
That kind of, no.
All right, let's hop in the Wayback Machine to American nerd culture in like the 80s and 90s.
Uh-huh.
So like Jordan Weissman is running this company, FASA. And they have two major properties, really. And one is Shadowrun, which is like the, at least for in the U.S., I think, is like the original cyberpunk RPG, like semi-mystical
Cyberpunk
series.
There might be another RPG. Cyberpunk itself, Cyberpunk 2020, may have hit at about the same time. But Shadowrun was the one that most people played. It's the one that had legs, you know?
And then their other property was basically a war game called BattleTech, and it's like totally a in terms of like sensibilities, it is absolutely like a 70s American war game, like where you see those like conventions of dudes like pushing Panzer divisions and NATO symbols around maps and everything. BattleTech is like absolutely like a spiritual successor to that, but it's also like what if that but anime mechs.
Right.
And, like, to the point where they actually got in trouble, like, a lot of their mech designs originally were kind of copied from Robotech.
Uh-huh.
And then there were a lot of mechs that couldn't be represented.
Wait, are you sure it's that way? It's not the other way? That Robotech took the
Robotech
Robotech?
Okay. This is 100%, like,
okay.
Because there was this entire, like, roster of mechs that in the community were called the Unseen.
Oh, you're totally right.
Because
yes.
They could not be graphically represented. But the problem was their stats were so, like, they were such, like, quintessential mechs to this universe that, like, of course you needed them in the game. You could just never depict them because
right.
Otherwise you were basically infringing on someone else's IP. So anyway, BattleTech, like, spawned a butt. Like, everyone played Mech Warrior.
Yep.
That's sort of the arcade sim shooter version of the BattleTech universe. There was the MechWarrior RPG.
There were BattleTech like cafes where you would go and get into. Like I love these. So there was the one that I used
to
go to.
The original one was in Chicago.
So there's one in Chicago. There's one in Vegas. There was one in Santa Monica.
Okay.
They were basically like. In character, they were incredible. So the ones that I went to,
already.
The place that I went to was called Virtual World, and you would go in, and it would be set up as if it were the like the not the lobby, but like the lounge of like an aircraft carrier, the lounge like a research center, and the people who worked there would be in like lab coats and bomber jackets, pretending to be like mech scientists, and they were like bubbling vials, and then there was a little side room that was like a card table where you and your other mech pilots would like play cards between sorties, and then when it was time to go, you went into another room, you watched like a campaign training video thing, or like a here's what you're going to go do, and then they took you into the other room where you sat in a big pod that was like, you know, like a big flight simulator
thing,
a 4-foot tall thing.
Yeah.
You sat down, you closed the hatch, and then there were like a billion buttons around, and you just did. You played MechWarrior. You played versus MechWarrior.
There was a video apparently
hosted
by Jim Belushi.
Correct.
What?
Absolutely. Yes.
Sorry. What?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jim Belushi was like the BattleTech captain or whatever that intro'd you before. I've never heard of this before, so I've been looking it up on Wikipedia. And yeah, Jim Belushi wants you to report for duty at the BattleTech Center.
Dude, it's so good. The BattleTech Centers, if I could like snap my fingers and have VR like turn into something, it would be new BattleTech Centers. Mm-hmm. It would be that this sort of like ridiculous in character, out of character like mashup. Also, it was too expensive. But the point is, what Rob, you're getting at is like there were cartoons, there were PC games that people would buy new graphics cards for, there were toys.
Shit tons of novels.
And then.
I read a ridiculous amount of, yeah.
Awesome.
And then just.
In third grade.
It sort of faded away.
Yeah, well, it was sort of this death by a thousand cuts.
Right.
And it didn't make the cut into whatever the next like phase of nerd culture was going to be. Like it just didn't quite take that leap. So around like the turn of the millennium, it's all just getting a little bit less popular. Fewer people are buying the games. You start seeing less and less new content coming out for that. The novels are starting to disappear, and they're starting to get like much, much shorter. The games stayed pretty. The PC games stayed pretty good until the end, right? Like MechWarrior 4 Mercenaries.
Good game.
Yeah, still one of the best. But it all went under Microsoft by this point as well, because Microsoft had sort of acquired FASA and to their way of thinking, I think a key part of that was also they acquired Jordan Weissman.
Right.
In some ways.
Well, and then they went on to make what? They did Crimson Skies with Microsoft, and then the Shadowrun FPS game, which is better than it. It's actually a decent FPS game. It's just like a really shitty Shadowrun game for very lore, like, nerd reasons. Like, all right, here's the one biggest one. This is an old grudge. I like that game a lot. I think that game is actually a really fun multiplayer shooter.
Okay.
Shadowrun is a game about sneaking into places, and, like, as, like, an RPG, like, you're a bunch of, like, hackers and mercenaries who break into to do corporate espionage, right? You go from one, you're paid by one corporation to sneak into a different corporation, like steal their top scientists or steal their secrets or sabotage their whatever. So because of that, the way magic works is like very draining. It hurts you a lot to do magic in this world because it's otherwise you could do ridiculous things. And one rule that was like very core was you can never teleport. Because teleporting would make it way easy to sneak into places.
Yeah.
And, like, the first ability they showed off for the Shadowrun FPS was like, and you can teleport.
No!
And so that whole community was like, fuck you, no. This is some fake bullshit. Get the fuck out of here with that. And, like, y'all, you're talking about elves teleporting. Please chill. Please chill a little bit. And also by y'all, I mean me 10 years ago. So anyway, but Shadowrun doesn't do well. And then, like, Battletech just kind of, MechWarrior just kind of stops being made.
Yeah, it just kind of fades away. And I think part of it as well is, in all this time, the core underlying tabletop game never really evolves beyond its sort of 70s war game sensibilities. So kind of a lot of what this is built on is sort of trapped in amber, and nobody would like it. Wasn't very modern,
right?
And so it all starts to fade. Jordan Weissman sort of tries to relaunch an updated game design for BattleTech. I can't remember what that offshoot was called. I think it was like sort of an offshoot of his HeroClix, series.
Oh, right.
But it doesn't really take because it's just not. It's new Coke, and that's not really what people want. A couple years ago, I did go back and play the original BattleTech board game, and man, it was terrible. It was so clunky. Like,
it was a different time.
Pardon?
It was a different time. Like, all of our shitty board games and war games are bad. Not all of them. Lots of them were bad, but we wanted big robots, and like that was enough for us to like look at damage charts for 3 hours.
You paid the price.
Yeah, we paid the price. Because like, look, I get to be a cool mad cat who walks around. That's the name of a
That's
mech.
The name of a thing?
Yeah, yeah. One of them.
That's
the
cool.
Mad Cat. The Mad Cat is the mech on the cover of MechWarrior 2, by the way. Just so like if you're familiar with that cover. Anyway, point is.
Thank you.
So a couple years ago, Shadowrun has taken off. Jordan Weissman is running buck wild. He's reclaiming all his old IPs, and Shadowrun is doing well. And then they launch a BattleTech Kickstarter, and they're like, we're going to adapt like classic turn-based BattleTech. Tactical gaming to the PC. And I was really apprehensive about this because I was like, oh god, but if it's like authentically BattleTech, if it is that board
it's going to be bad. Yeah.
It's going to be bad. It's going to be really lame. And it just hit backer beta, but PR sent around some codes to some people in the press, and I played it a little bit at ParadoxCon, and it dodged both my major fears with this game, which one, it would be like too old-fashioned and dated and terrible, or it would be XCOM but with giant mechs. And it's really doing its own thing that feels like entirely authentic to BattleTech, but it's not like, it doesn't owe.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Too much to modern turn-based sensibility.
So that's the thing that I was expecting. Was like, okay, Shadowrun is basically an RPG that when it's time for fights, it's XCOM, right? It doesn't always feel as tight as XCOM. The abilities are interesting, but sometimes a little more like crunchy and clunky than XCOMs are. But it's basically like a pretty good tactical combat game where you're placing troopers behind cover and shooting at different angles and stuff, right? And I was like, I like mechs a lot, so that's going to forgive any apprehension, I'm sure. But that's not what BattleTech is. I actually brought this up with you, I think, Patrick, the other day, which was when we were playing Battlegrounds, I was talking about how it reminded me a little bit of playing MechWarrior Mercenaries and like some of the MechWarrior mods and then the current free-to-play MechWarrior game, because in those games, it's really bad to die, and also you kind of have a lot of health in some senses. And so it always makes sense to, like, get into little skirmishes and then back away. And that is not how XCOM or Shadowrun work. That's how old Battletech worked. So it's a lot of, like, okay, I'm going to position myself, get some pot shots off, and then retreat behind more cover. And Battlegrounds feels that way to me. And so this demo, Rob, you played it at Paradox. What was the demo that you played at Battletech?
Pretty much the same thing that you've been playing with this.
It's just like a skirmish. It's just like a skirmish mode.
Yeah, okay. 4v4.
It feels that way, and it's also really smooth, and I love it because it feels like a different type of tactics game. Like, in my mind, there's been the XCOMs / Shadowrun / other things like that. There have been the Fire Emblem-y, Tactics Ogre-y, Final Fantasy, you know, tactics-y style JRPG tactics games, which are about positioning and, like, turn order and stuff like that. And then there's, like, Frozen Synapse, which, like, is unlike most other things because everybody goes at once, which is really, you just kind of plot things and they go. Whereas this just feels like, I don't know, Rob, you're the tactics guy here. What do you think are the defining characters of the game that they're making?
I think a lot of it hinges on turn order of play, and this is one of the defining things of Battletech. It's not I move all my guys, take my turn, and then you move all your guys. The way it works in this game is every single unit has sort of an initiative rating, and so I move one of mine, then you move your next unit. And the weird thing is the best initiative to have, or the in some ways the most powerful, like, option to have is the last move, basically.
Right.
Like, so your heaviest mech might be taking the very last action of the
But that
turn.
Might be fine because everybody else has already put themselves in what their final position is, and now you're going to turn the corner with this huge giant thing and, like, you know, use all of your abilities at once to drop a billion, like, missiles and lasers on an enemy through a canyon.
But it doesn't just turn into, I mean, look, there are times it does turn into just a slugging match, but to your point a moment ago, Austin, I think the reason this doesn't turn into a giant, like, mech scrum is because the other aspect of this is heat management. You remember this from the Mech Warrior games.
Yep.
If you ever played those.
Heat management.
Yeah, if you just, you know, it gets a little too steamy if you're just, like, blasting with everything you got, like, every single turn.
Yeah.
So, like, and some mechs are more heat efficient than others, and that's
and
the
like,
aspect of it.
If you're in the, so the way I played last night, I played the skirmish, and it was a 4-on-4, and I had, like, a big mech that could sniping stuff, like, really big, heavy, single gun. I had two little ones that had jump jets, so they could jump around and kind of just kind of harry the opposition and kind of, like, oh, I'm behind you, ha ha ha, you gotta fucking deal with me now, asshole. And then I had one that was, like, a missile boat. And the thing that kept happening was, like, it's late, I'm playing at 2 a.m., I'm just, like, shoot all the stupid missiles. And, like, again and again, I was like, no, you idiot, like, I'm overheating now, it's hot in my stupid cockpit, I'm sweating, the pilot, like, takes damage, which is another big differentiation between this and other traditional tactics games, is like, oh, there's a pilot and also the mech. The mech takes damage and the pilot inside can get hurt if you get knocked around too much or whatever.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And so at the end of the match, it was, like, one big guy left. I lost one of my mechs. My other ones were, like, not in good shape. And so I was like, all right, I'm just going to march this mech into the water, which will make her cool faster because the water is cooling. And then I'm just going to launch literally everything I have in one big blow. And it won. And it was like, ah, yeah. Like, that feeling is really good because it otherwise it's, like, a lot of, like, pecking away at people because these are big armored machines. These are tanks. And so there's lots of just, like, yeah, I hit it, but I didn't do any real damage. It just, like, kind of hit off some of its armor or something. And so when you do get a win here, it feels really great.
Well, and the other cool thing is every mech has, like, a different weapon loadout, and every weapon has, like, its own sweet spots and optimal ranges. So, like, you're not just, like, trying to get in that. Okay, so it's not like XCOM where you're just trying to find the square where you're going to have the 85% chance of landing the shot, and that's the decision. What's driving this decision is kind of like, okay, what gives you that, like, with the weapons you're willing to fire in your current heat situation, what gives you the most damage and the highest odds? And that might mean that there's a lot of turns where one of your big weapons is just sitting idle because you're just not in the sweet spot, or it's going to be too costly to fire in terms of heat. So it does, like, have this sort of, like, there's a lot of, like, skirmishing and friction and, like, a lot of, like, just sort of whittling away at each other. But it does make those moments where you go all in and just, like, drop the hammer on somebody feel amazing. And that leads me to Mech Melee.
Uh-huh. Which is not like a
so
big...
So is there punching with mechs in this? This gets me excited.
I know, well, you're a robot fan. You like, or not, you're a punching fan. You're
a boxing
fan.
I'm a big fan of punching.
You're like,
I like punching. I like kicking.
Okay.
I like punching. I like grappling. I like choking. Okay, this got weird.
Is there punching? Are there robots that punch?
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. You're good. Don't
there's
worry.
A lot
no
of
judge.
Punching.
No kink shaming.
I think there might be some kicking that's charging.
There's definitely
there's a,
kicking.
There's a little choking, but it's okay. The robots like it.
Okay.
See, there you go.
There's kicking, which I learned yesterday because I was like, oh, I'm just going to jump around this big giant robot. Fuck this guy. And he's like, no, kick. And just like swatted one of my little mechs away. And that was, again, a really good moment because playing this as a war game or even as like a shooter for so long, you forget that these are big humanoid machines that are terrifying and that have momentum and weight behind them. I think the shooters have been done a good job of momentum, but not necessarily like, oh, right, this thing could just like crush a house with its fist. And this game, I think, does do that a little bit better. How much mech melee did you get into at the demo that you played?
Oh, I got into some mech melee. It's a key part of the game. because like, one, there's a lot of times where... Okay, so I don't know. I haven't figured out if it works this way in BattleTech, the PC game we're all playing right now. But mm-hmm. in the original game, you picked up like the longer distance you had to charge, you also picked up like charging damage.
So,
you could like send a light mech sprinting into somebody's face. suddenly, it was actually more efficient than any weapon that mech was carrying. Like mm-hmm. you would lay someone out that way. A lot of times, like, once you're in close range, it can just be a better option to smack somebody because then that uses your mech's own weight to do damage. But I also had, and this is the moment, like, I really started to fall in love with this game. So in this session I played at ParadoxCon, I had this one mech that I've always hated, the Commando.
Uh-huh.
And the Commando is, it's just a terrible, shitty light mech. It's like it's not fast enough to be like a real skirmisher. It's not like carrying enough heavy weaponry to be like a, you know, an assassin type mech. It's just it's a crappy jack of all trades mech. And so I basically just put it on ice for this entire battle with this other team, and just sort of had it spotting targets and hiding. And I eventually like sort of slipped it. It just ended up sort of slipping around behind the lines, and the battle started to turn against me pretty badly. Their heaviest mech was just like putting the hurt on all of my other mechs. So this Commando comes out from behind the trees, walks up behind this enemy mech, and the rear armor is always lighter. Takes a melee attack, and the animation was so good. This thing winds up, punches this other mech so hard in the back. Its fist, like, flies through its rear armor.
Jesus.
It rips out its reactor shielding, basically, and the thing, like, goes nuclear on the spot.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's...
It was fantastic.
That's a good punch.
That's a good punch. So the one thing that I'll say that I'm curious about how this game will feel, one is I'm curious what, like, the campaign structure will be. I think it's going to be more like Mercenaries, where it's like you're taking contracts
100%.
And building up a thing. The fights are long, and they are the core of the experience, as far as I understand. It's going to be, like, a lighter RPG. Like, you have pilots who get better and stuff like that. But, like, Shadowrun is a game where you explore a city, and you're going into, like, a building, and, oh, it's a secret lab where people are doing experiments. And so, like, you're always finding out information. This is a tactics game, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And, like, the fight that I had last night took 30 minutes. And that is not an insignificant amount of time for an audience that might be coming from the Shadowrun games who expect those fights to be 10 minutes long or 5 minutes long in comparison. I'm not dissing that. I'm into it, but again, I'm the guy who wants to do a 30-minute mech fight and not – you know what I mean?
I just don't think that audience is – like the BattleTech and Shadow – like it's the same company, but I just don't think those are the same fan bases. Like it's – this is from mech people, Austin.
Right. I'm both. You forget that I ran an 80-hour podcast where I got to tell my own story that was like, what if cyberpunk and mechs? So that's
true.
You know.
The campaign, I think, does sound pretty cool. It is, you know, you're running a mercenary company on the edge of civilized space, taking contracts, mm-hmm. like building up faction credibility with the major powers. The cool thing is, a lot of your characters are also going to be non-mech warrior characters, so you're going to have staff for your mercenary company.
Oh, that's
like,
cool.
Who's working on the mechs? Who are your sensor officers? Who's your supply officer?
That's, like, my favorite thing in video games.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons, like, I like it when I like when there's space games where I have a crew on my ship that is like, oh, that's Jim, and he works on, he's in the cafeteria, and that's Mary, and she flies my fighter pilots, yeah. But, like, that's just a button I hit. I don't, it's not a fighter game. I like games that, like, think about the logistics and, like, all of the weird people who make a thing work. So I'm excited about that, for sure. We'll see. When is that out? Is there a date on that yet? Just later this year?
I'm sure there is, but I've completely forgotten that.
Okay. We're good at our job. 2017 is what I'm typing. I'm typing in Battletech 2017. Patrick, do you think you'll give this a shot?
Yeah, I mean, I just trust Harebrained, essentially.
Right, at this point.
What they did, you know, they did... I had no allegiance to the Shadowrun universe. You know, find Cyberpunk as interesting as everyone else, but they just made a really good strategy game. So if they are interested in making a mech game, I am interested in playing.
Giving that a shot. Yeah, I'm curious. We'll see how that shakes out. I think
is that supposed to come out this year?
Mid to late 2017 is what they've said.
Oh, okay.
This again, they just released the Kickstarter backer beta. I hope they get a lot of good feedback from people. I suspect they will. There's enough to like tinker with, enough like skirmish maps and different mechs you can play with for people to get. They're like hands out on it and
get their punches into
Into it. Yeah. Let's go to the question bucket. If you have a question, you can send it to gamingadvice.com. We will see it and either read it on a Monday because that's when we skim from the top, or we'll toss it into the bucket and then we'll dig through the bucket and
the question. Insulting. In life.
Well, it depends. Sometimes
it's just
you're
a big
insulted.
Bucket.
You know, sometimes life insults you.
Sometimes you're insulting.
Sometimes it happens. I don't know. I'm not here to defend it. I'm just here to say this is the way the world works. I'm like Rob's third grade teacher. I'm trying to teach you how the world works. Sometimes you write a good question and then it gets tossed in a bucket. It sucks.
Wow.
But maybe we'll pull it out of the bucket. Give me a number from one to whatever number is here.
52.
It was like 100? Whoa, 52. Okay. You said that in a way that like disintegrated the sound, Rob.
It did. It was a very mech kind of sound. It was a very robotic sound.
All right. This comes in from Will in Chicago. This is long time, first time. Fan,
what's up, Will?
Fan
hey, Will.
Of Idle Weekend, the podcast that Danielle
wrote. What great taste.
Austin often talks about how pretentious he used to be in his style of criticism, game choice, etc., and that he still needs to check himself. Art school did this to me, too. I was bullied a lot growing up, and when I hit college, I found that the thing that made me feel powerful. Gaming. Nope, that's not what he says. Painting. It was like...
That's very different.
It's a much different story. I was like, wait, is this going to go bad? And no, it didn't. It went painting.
It went good. Okay. Yeah.
Mario Paint.
Mario
Painting.
I kept longer studio hours than my peers and was genuinely very good at what I did. I was constantly praised by my professors, and over the years, it went to my head. When it came time for critiques, I became vicious. During one, so to be clear, critiques in art school are when like a whole group gets together and you go, okay, you present your project, and the whole class has to critique
everybody
the thing.
Everybody has to say something.
And in my experience, you have to be quiet and just listen to that feedback, and it's brutal. When it came time for critiques, I became vicious. During one, I embarrassed a peer in such a profound way that he stopped coming to class.
Oh,
he stopped painting and still does not paint to this day. 6 days later.
Okay.
Six years later. Not 6 days. It was six days
ago. Like, you know, give it a little more time, Will.
6 years later.
Hey, poor guy.
Reading. Yeah. In my insecurity and need to feel strong, I took from him what made him happy. I realized I had transformed art from being a positive force into being a weapon. When I internalized what I had done, I couldn't paint anymore. I just wrote short stories, and I barely graduated. It took a long time for me to forgive myself and 5 years to start painting again. Many years removed from that smoldering moment, I still think about it when I write about games. I always need to remind myself that there is a fundamental distinction between criticism and critical thinking. People make games. As much as I like to think that every iteration of Assassin's Creed is a rapidly decaying intellectual graveyard, so many spouses eat dinner alone. Yep. So many spouses eat dinner alone night after night so their partner can do what they love, make games to bring us happiness. So what events in your life have shaped how you critique or think about criticism? Briefly, Rob, your audio is weird. You should maybe turn off your mic and turn it back on. We're getting like lots of static from you. So what events in your life have shaped your style of criticism or how you critique?
So I used to it used to be my job. I was sort of a primary film critic at a queer website once upon a time, and there were a lot of really horrible, like genuinely, like people who had no money whatsoever and probably not a lot of like film school education and that kind of thing.
Right.
And that shaped a whole lot of both how I went to film school, so like how I made my little short films and wrote them, and also how I wrote about them. In that, I do think that there is an important distinction between things that have a really big budget and things that have no budget whatsoever. Right. And it's not saying to grade on a curve. It's not saying I don't like grading things in general in this way. But it does mean you take – nothing exists in a vacuum, and you take what was made and the intentions behind it. That means something. Right. Like, it means something to me as somebody who's taking this in, and it means something to me as somebody who, like, wants to understand the creative process
behind it. And write
about
it to a wider audience.
Exactly.
And bring it up. Yeah.
Exactly.
How about you, Patrick?
I mean, I think back to that conversation we already had on Waypoint Radio when we were talking about We Are Chicago.
Right.
Like,
right.
Where you're, like, weighing your desire for something to be interesting against, you know, your role as a critic to sort of speak truth to whatever your experience with that thing is. And I you know, like, when earlier this week when I wrote about Perception, like a game where you play, you know, a blind woman, has an interesting mechanic. It's a horror game. And when I sat down to write about it, I was like, well, this is no fun. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to sit here and I'm not going to dunk on this game, but, like, I don't have a lot of great things to say about it. And those, like, I will say, like, those, as a critic, those aren't necessarily as interesting to write either, right? Like, it's much more interesting and more enjoyable to write about, like, flaws in, like, something you enjoy, because, like, you can, there's more to extrapolate there, as opposed to just, like, this thing just didn't do a lot for me, and now I had to find a way to express that.
Right.
Like, I writing negative things both usually does, like, poor traffic,
yeah.
And then also isn't as enjoyable to write about, because who wants to read about that and who wants to write about that? But it's important sometimes, like, if that is necessary or something. Like, horror games mean a lot to me, so it's like, I still wanted to talk about Perception and where I came from and what I experienced with that,
yeah.
Even if at the end of it it's like, and you probably shouldn't play it, but I did. here you go.
Yeah, it's definitely a weird thing. I relate a lot to Will's story in that, like, when I think about my time in undergrad, I always – and I think it comes from a similar place as Will, which is, like, I had a childhood and an adolescence in which I was not super confident about myself, in which the one thing that I could cling to was that my grades were okay, and that even if my grades were bad, because I had to cheat – or not cheat, but had to sign my name or my mother's name on the report card thing, I still always – presented as being very smart. And then when I got to college, like, I really excelled in the field that I was really excelled at, right? I did very well in my philosophy courses,
yeah.
And took it as a badge of honor that people thought I was the smartest person in the room. And I think at that point, maybe that's okay. But that second step was like, I'm going to make sure everyone here thinks I'm the smartest person in the room, even if I'm not,
right.
Because I'm good at talking. Because I can talk my way into seeming smart, even if I have not done the legwork, even if I have not spent the time, you know, reading through whatever the assigned reading is, you know, like, and that was deeply unhealthy, and took a long time to get over. And for me, there are definitely a few key moments in my life that were like, because this is kind of Will's question, was like, what shaped your way to critique? And for me, it's almost always when I realized that I couldn't cut that part of me off. I couldn't turn that part of me off in personal life instead of just mm-hmm. as a critic, right? Like, as a critic, even today, I have no problem going in and really, like, tearing something apart, even if I know it comes from a small creator, even if I know that it comes from someone who wants to do something well. But I'm able to temper it because of instances in my personal life where I found myself in critic mode instead of in, like, son mode.
Right.
I think the biggest one, and this is going to be, like, Austin at his most shitty right now. My father and I – so my dad used to own a few retail clothing stores. At this point, I think we were down to, like, one or two. And we got into an argument about politics or about business practices or something. And – I was trying to state my position on something. I think probably something about, like, psychology or about like how you should deal with customers. And this is somebody who's, like, worked in business his whole life. He's worked in retail forever. He's speaking from a place of expertise from experience. I'm speaking from a place of expertise from having taken these courses and, like, read books and being that person, right? And at that point in my life, I valued that way more. And he's like says, you know, oh, the way people work is X. And I go, like, no, the way people work is Y. And he goes, like, well, why do you think that? And I was like, you should read some books, Dad. And he goes, like, well, he goes, I read books. And I, like, looked at him square in the eyes. He's like 6'7".
Yeah.
I was like, read more. And
oh,
I, like, walked
God.
Out. And, like, I walked out and, like, immediately was like, oh, fuck. Like,
ugh.
I just, like, punched him. Like, I just, like, did this terrible, like, disrespectful, like, cruel, like, I found the most cruel I could be, which was like, you are taller than me. You are stronger than me. You grew up as, like, a jock who, like, really also had an appreciation for the arts and, like, wanted to learn, but you were, like, a basketball player. How do I found your little one insecurity, which is that, like, I'm smarter than you. And, like, I'm not. I didn't have the experience he did. But I found the thing that I knew would wound him. Yeah. And that was the moment that I was like, ooh, I need to dial it back just a little bit. and then I took that into my critical life also, yeah. Where I still have that. I can still do that insult. I can still, like, twist that knife. But I only do it when I really mean it and not instinctually, not because I want to come across as smart. And that improved my life dramatically. So that was definitely my moment, I think, if there is one.
Oh, yeah.
If you have questions, again, you can send them to gaming@vice.com. We will read them.
Yeah.
At least.
Eventually.
Eventually at some point. You guys did a big bucket blast episode. I hate saying that phrase.
We did a bucket blast.
And we should do another one of those soon.
It was fun. We had Tim on.
Maybe we'll do one of those right after E3 as, like, a good low-key.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we're coming back from E3. We're just going to read some questions.
You
and
just kind of dump
them.
The bucket on your head exactly. After a race. Like, you run a race and you dump the bucket
exactly.
On your head. You're like, oh, yeah.
You can find everything we do at waypointadvice.com. Also at twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice. Danielle, where can people find you on the internet?
At Danielle RI on Twitter.
Patrick?
You can find me at Patrick Pulpit.
I was going to say it for Rob. You can find Rob at Rob Zachney on Twitter. You can find me at Austin_Walker. Oh, we made it through the week.
Yeah, we did.
A little bit of time left. What should people do over the weekend, Danielle?
I think they should go for a run.
Okay.
If they like running, they should do some painting. If they like painting, maybe do something artistic.
If someone insulted you in paint class, in art class 6 years ago,
don't let it stop you.
Pick that paintbrush back up. If someone told you to read more, give them a hug and forgive them for being an asshole. But then also, like, hey, try to find some time to read more. Like,
ask them for recommendations.
Ask them, hey, what are you reading?
What are you reading?
Exactly.
I'd like to read this book.
But what else do we tell them, Danielle?
We tell them, be good or be good at it.
There it is. Peace.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.